This is KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Maureen Cavanaugh. Memorial Day weekend typically draws San Diegans back to the beach. And while we're reintroducing ourselves to the ocean, San Diego lifeguards will be on the lookout, watching for anybody who may be in danger. But that was not always the case. The development of the lifeguard service began slowly in fits and starts since the late 1800s. And it took a tragedy off the coast of Ocean Beach to really mark the start of the modern-day San Diego Lifeguard Service. Michael Martino, former chief lifeguard for California State Parks, has written a history of the lifeguards called Help San Diego Lifeguards to the Rescue. And Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
This book begins way back in the 1860s, and your chapter on that time is called Citizen Rescuers. Can you tell us how that worked? Were there, like, designated citizens safeguarding the beaches?
There were not. It started to be that people were coming to the ocean for recreation, and occasionally they would get into trouble. A rip current would pull, they would be in a situation where they were drowning, a cramp, whatever it might be, and their only recourse would be if a fellow citizen happened to have seen what was going on and made the decision to try to rescue them. So I equated that to the story of the Good Samaritan, where you were at the mercy of a fellow citizen who made a choice to try to rescue you or not rescue you.
Or who could or couldn't swim.
And many times what would happen is people who couldn't swim still did it. And then you would have a double drowning or a multiple fatality. And it was those type of events that got people to say, is there another way? Could we provide rescue equipment? That was sort of the first step. Is there rescue equipment that we could just have available? So if somebody sees somebody drowning, could they throw them a buoy? And those were the baby steps that started. And then what inevitably would happen is people would vandalize the equipment. It wasn't available, or people didn't know how to use the equipment. I've got a couple of stories in there about dories, so a rowboat that was available for making a rescue. People attempted to use the boat, however, they didn't have the skill.
Now, as you're explaining, the idea of lifeguards began evolving over time, but it took a tragedy to make city officials aware of the need for a well-staffed lifeguard service in San Diego. Tell us what happened at Ocean Beach in May of 1918.
It was a typical San Diego day, and over 5,000 soldiers and their families at Ocean Beach. What had happened was there was only one lifeguard working, Louis Chavaud. He was responsible for all of those people. And about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe about 3:20, he went to contact a group of soldiers. And those soldiers were swimming out to a place called Wonderland Point. And he waved them over and tried to tell them about the dangers and so on, and they were starting to comply. But one of the soldiers rallied the troops and said, "Don't listen to them," and they swam off. And what I say in the book, and it seems really how it happened, a proverbial snap of the finger. The tides were switching, the rip current started pulling, the waves were coming in at 6 to 8 feet, and all of the water that was in Mission Bay, also known as False Bay, started flowing back out into these tremendous rip currents. It wasn't just one rip current. They were going in many directions, sideways, laterally, and it became a catastrophic drowning event. So Louis had his hands full. He ultimately did his best, and there were police officers who had prior lifeguarding experience that came to the aid. There were citizens who came to the aid. When all was said and done, after approximately 2+ hours of attempted rescue work, 13 people were missing, 2 were confirmed dead with their bodies recovered, and 60 or more were rescued. It was the most catastrophic single event drowning in San Diego's history, and that was the impetus that helped city leaders get together with community leaders and focus on beach safety and start to move in a more professional direction that eventually led us today, but it still wasn't the catch-all, be-all. It got us moving in the right direction.
Now, in the book, you write about how lifeguards have to have a deep knowledge of how the ocean behaves in order to anticipate possible problems. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. One of the typical things that we'll get as lifeguards is the stereotype of, oh, it must be the greatest job in the world. And there's no doubt it is. But the perception is you get to sit up in the tower and you simply soak in the sun and look out over this beautiful scenery and occasionally make rescues. Well, lifeguards have to have a much deeper and more concentrated knowledge of what's going on. And that means Where are the rip currents? Where are the dangerous areas? Where are the deep spots? Where are the rips? What is my tide doing today? What is the wind doing today? Things that people might not even think twice about, but I will look at a family who's coming in and you'll look at their clothing. You'll look at where they've come from. You'll look at where they set their stuff down. Rip currents have a tendency to look like the most calm area because as the water moves out, they prevent the waves from breaking. So many times families will put their beach blankets down right in front of the rip current. And a good lifeguard will not wait for that family to go in the water. A good lifeguard will go to that family as they're setting down their beach towels, explain to them the dynamics of the situation, and move them to a safer spot. The goal for any lifeguard is prevention. As a lifeguard supervisor and as the chief of state parks, I wanted to see my people making 10, 20, 30 times more safety contacts than they were making rescues. Then I knew we were being active, proactive, and preventing drowning.
You describe rip currents in the book, and you also talk about set waves and these potentially life-threatening situations that people can get into. I'm wondering, though, on a more sort of mundane note, outside of these rescues, what are some of the most frequent problems that lifeguards encounter among beachgoers?
Well, in the old days, and you'll even see it from the interviews from the early guys, alcohol was a huge problem. And as we know here in San Diego, it became a problem to such an extent that our community leaders banned it from the beach. And I would say at a time, you could easily say that 90% of our rescues were alcohol related. So that's one area that is very common. Now it's not so much, particularly at our beaches in San Diego. For the guys that are and ladies that are working the bay, you'll have boating accidents, cuts with glass. So those are the day-to-day that a lot of times folks don't think of, but lifeguards see them all the time.
Now, I read that the San Diego Lifeguard to the Rescue book has been in the making for 10 years. Why did you want to write this book?
You'll find what I'll call picture books about lifeguard stuff out there, but I wanted to develop a narrative that had interest both professionally for lifeguards, had interest for beach people who just like the beach, and then my really big goal was I want somebody with really no knowledge of the ocean to pick this book up and say, this story is fantastic because what these men did. And it's something that I think all of us as San Diegans and people who enjoy the beach can be proud because it's not just about lifeguards. It's about how communities rallied and demanded safety for their families when they came out to the beach.
Author Michael Martino will be signing copies of his book, Help, San Diego Lifeguards to the Rescue, A History of Their Service, Volume 1. And that signing starts at 5 p.m. tonight at the Ocean Beach Lifeguard Station. Michael, thank you.
Thank you very much. I hope to see everybody there.